We heard in the last segment how runaway slaves in Missouri and elsewhere were eager to get to Illinois, a free state and a stepping stone to freedom. The Illinois-Mississippi River town of Quincy was a popular station on the railroad thanks to an abolitionist, Dr. Richard Eales, and his wife Jane. In the mid-19th century, they helped hundreds of slaves flee northward. Their home, Eales House, still stands in tribute to its history and to the Eales. Joining me by phone to tell the story are Laura Sievert, Executive Director of Arts Quincy, an organization that promotes the arts in Quincy. Mike Smith is with Eales House. He is a committee member there. Thank you both so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you. It's our pleasure.
Laura, let me begin with you. How important a stop was Quincy on the Underground Railroad?
Well, at this time in 1842, Quincy is really kind of the western frontier, and even Missouri was sparsely settled. So once you get past about middle of Missouri, so this is really a big crossing point for a lot of people. And Quincy was a home for commerce. Quincy was a home for a lot of the river trade and traffic. Of course, from Quincy to Hannibal to St. Louis is a huge corridor. So it gave ample opportunity for people to have ways across the river. And, of course, the river at the time was less dammed and less built than it is now. So it was often very wide and could be very wild. So, and people forget how dangerous just the idea of getting into the river could be. But it was quite the time in our history.
Well, not all people who crossed the river there did it by boat. A lot of them swam, didn't they?
That's true. And there's no real great record keeping of, you know, how many people may have even drowned trying to get across the river. But we all know that, of course, we're living it right now, the torrential downpours that can hit and how fast the river can come up and how fast the river can flow. And oftentimes slaves had escaped from much further away. So they had been on the run for some time coming out of Arkansas or Missouri, and they arrived on our shores exhausted and hungry and maybe not prepared for some of that magnitude. So there were certainly some people who perished on the trip just across the river to Quincy.
Well, one of the reasons, Mike Smith, that they wanted to cross at that particular point was because of a gentleman, Dr. Richard Eales. What was his role in all of this?
Well, first of all, thank you for allowing us to promote this.
Oh, sure.
Dr. Eales was, in 1835, his house was only four blocks from the Mississippi River. And he did live here until his death in 1848. He was an abolitionist, of course, and he was actively involved in the Underground Railroad. And we know this for sure because in 1842, he was caught helping an escaped slave named Charlie from Monticello. Charlie was brought to the Eales House by a freed black man named Barry Barnett, who spotted Charlie swimming across the river. While transporting Charlie, however, to Quincy's Mission Institute, which was a safer hiding place, Dr. Eales came across a posse who was looking for Charlie, and of course Dr. Eales urged him to flee. I was listening to your segment earlier. It was really dangerous to write things down.
Sure, of course.
Really dangerous. And that's why you don't have many people who can attest to things, but we're really proud of this legacy because, number one, we know this really happened. After Dr. Eales urged Charlie to flee, however, he was found later and returned to Missouri. We don't know what happened to Charlie, unfortunately. Dr. Eales returned a short time later to his home and was arrested, was charged with harboring and secreting a fugitive slave under the Illinois Criminal Code, and he was fined $400, which he appealed. And meanwhile, he became president of the Illinois Anti-Slavery Party in 1843, was a candidate for the Liberty Party for the presidential election of 1844. He lost his appeal to the Illinois Supreme Court, the process which drained him financially and emotionally, and he died on a riverboat. But that's it in a nutshell. However, in December 2014, Dr. Eales was pardoned by the outgoing governor, Governor Quinn. It took over 100 years, but he was pardoned.
I just want to clarify one thing so people aren't confused. And we talked about the Charlie having come from Monticello. That Monticello, Missouri, northwest,
right.
Northwest of Quincy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right.
The figures that I have are that, Laura, you might want to get back in on this, is that Dr. Eales assisted hundreds and hundreds of slaves. Does that sound right? Is that what your figures show?
That is. He actually had moved here specifically to help slaves. So what's interesting about Dr. Eales from that perspective is he was actually became interested in the abolitionist movement when he was studying medicine at Yale. So he's out east, and he says to his wife, hey, we can't fix this from here. We can't help from Yale, from that area. Mm-hmm. So he moved here specifically for this. The numbers that I've seen estimates from 200 to 400 slaves had been through his property. This was sort of an estimate based on how long he was in Quincy, how long he was said to be helping, and how many people he could help at any given time. One thing about Quincy particularly is being right at the very first stop on the Underground Railroad, right? They're trying to get to Canada because at this time there's still Illinois is a free state, but it's not, but it's got a law that says they must return runaways. So it's not a safe place to stay. And Quincy particularly, not a safe place to stay because it's the very first stop, the very first place that they would look for somebody who was missing. So Dr. Eales' house is four blocks from the river, and he needed to get people through quickly. So while many slaves would move from here to one of six or eight different directions that they could move from Quincy, he moved people, lots of people, very quickly through his area. And then as a physician, he had access to a lot of different places that maybe other people wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Don?
Yeah.
Here's the real interesting thing, a piece of trivia. Also, when Dr. Eales passed away, at his funeral were hundreds of people of color. Hmm. And as they started to talk to one another, they all realized that this one man was responsible for helping them to secure freedom. I thought that gave me chill bumps when I first read that and saw that. That's how we know that he helped hundreds and hundreds of people.
How did they know where to go? I mean, you know, communication's a lot different back in the day than it is today. How did folks from Monticello, Missouri, and other places know head for Dr. Eales' house? How did they know about him?
That was the miracle of our Underground Railroad. It was by word of mouth. And people, the slaves knew, people of color knew, and lots of whites. You had to have people who were not of color to help you with this project. They couldn't do it alone. Let's face it, most of them couldn't read or write. But through songs, through quilts, through all types of signals, they would know where to go. That was the wonderment of the Underground Railroad, actually.
Laura, did you want to add something there? It sounded like you were trying to get
yeah,
in.
Yeah, sorry.
That's all right. Go ahead.
He's exactly right. So you know, you couldn't just write a letter, but this is kind of the original viral marketing, right? So this is word of mouth of safe passages and when passages were safe and when passages were not. Your last guest, spoke of a group that got separated across the river and didn't try to make a crossing because they saw an unsafe route. They may have gone back to other folks that they knew and said, hey, this place is being watched right here. Let's move on to the next. It's very much a matter of communicating with each other and having allies. And this isn't very, very long before the Civil War broke out. So we're talking about a time where people were choosing sides. Were they going to be on the side of continuing slavery, or were they going to be on the side of freedom? So there, even in Missouri, a state that allowed slaves, there were certainly allies to help them find safe passage. In Quincy, it's suspected that there were many safe houses in Quincy. What I told the last tour group that I took through the Eales house myself was, you know, the only reason we know about Dr. Eales is because he got caught. He got caught abetting these slaves. So the best places we wouldn't know about now because they were never found out. So, we suspect that there were many places that were helping people in Quincy. And Quincy's known for that, not just with the slaves, but we have a long history with the Mormon Church of helping the Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints escape as well. So Quincy's got a history of helping.
Well, we had heard in an earlier segment that this was the time also of the Fugitive Slave Act, in which when, you know, people were very actively tracking down those folks who were on the run. And I assume that there were cash rewards of some sort if in fact, these slaves were returned. Is that part of the story there as well?
Oh, absolutely. Sadly, you can see some of the historical documents about the rewards, and they were often based on the perceived value of the slave that had escaped. So Charlie was said to be a particularly big, burly guy. I don't know that this is just an account, but a value to his owners in Monticello, and maybe his reward would be a larger one. So that's why a full posse of men would come after him. Absolutely, when you look back at it, there's so much shame that it could have ever happened, and it could have happened right here in our backyards. But there's also, I think, for Quincy and really any Illinois River town that is in a similar situation, a lot of pride that some of our residents took it upon themselves to step up and help out, to great danger to themselves, great danger to both the escaped person, but also the person helping.
Mike, as I recall my history, these posses were called slavers, and that was a business. It was because there was some cash involved.
Oh, for sure. It was very lucrative, a very lucrative business. However, if you were an abolitionist, there was no way in the world that you could support it, and you did everything in your power to dissuade it. To overthrow the business, so to speak.
Right. Yeah, I was fascinated by something you said a while ago, Mike, and I saw it in Laura, in your magazine. You mentioned quilts, and what's fascinating about that is how quilts were used as signals to the slaves as to what place was safe and safe haven and what place was not. Could you discuss that?
Not only quilts, but songs, actually. A lot of our songs, a lot of the hymnals were used that way. They were talking in code. For instance, if they said, I'm going at midnight on the midnight train, well, you knew that meant at midnight, be near the railroad tracks, for instance. And, you know, the slave owners paid no attention to these people, what they were saying. They felt that they were just dumb, ignorant, crazy people, or to work for them for a little or nothing. However, these people were smarter and more cunning than we knew. And they used the quilts, of course. Laura, you can talk about the quilts.
Yeah, so the quilts, and we have a terrific couple of reenactors up here that show examples of these quilts. But the idea being visual cues on your home could signify that you are a safe place, or may signify that you're being watched. So some of the examples that we published in our magazine is a quilt square with what looks like a boat on it. So if you knew that I need to get somebody to a crossing and with a boat, I could hang it in my windowsill like I'm working. I'm just a housewife working on my daily duties, and I just made this beautiful quilt square, but I hang it in a conspicuous place on a clothesline or a window. This could be a visual marker. Same with different configurations of lanterns. So a lot of this happens, of course, in the dead of night. So really it's about visual cues and what to look for next. One of my favorite quilt squares that W.T. Johnson and Matt Morris like to talk about is a kind of a crosshatched pattern. And this was used to signify a city, actually, the city of Cleveland. And I didn't know that many of the people from Quincy trying to get to Canada would actually head towards Ohio. And it sounds counterintuitive, but when you stop to think about what northern Iowa or northern Wisconsin would look like at this time of the world, it's very unsettled and very wild and still quite populated with different Native American tribes. So they actually went the more populated route and went through Michigan and Ohio to get north.
You know, in sticking with the quilts for a moment, it occurs to me that women must have been very, very actively involved in this whole operation because they were the ones who were making the quilts.
Absolutely. And, we talk a lot about Dr. Richard Eales, but, of course, his wife, Jane, was right there with him the whole steps of the way. So, a whole family had to be on board to decide we're going to take risks. I mean, they had kids, they had a livelihood, and they were taking this risk together. So I like to think that the people who decided to do this had strong women in their lives too, that facilitated it and make it happen.
Mike, what a lot of people might not realize was that for many of these slaves, the ultimate destination was Canada, not necessarily the northern U.S., but beyond that into Canada. Why Canada?
You know, I'm not real sure why Canada, to be honest.
I'll jump in. At the time, Canada was actual freedom, so they didn't have the reciprocity. They didn't have the return rule. So if you made it to Illinois, you were in a free state, but you were not a free person because you could still be returned. Kind of right, anti-extradition. Once you get to Canada, it's not. They have no obligation to return you, and Canada would not.
Interesting. And just flashing through my mind is the thought of the Vietnam era and all the young Americans who fled to Canada avoid consuming. There's kind of a parallel there, I suppose, again, because of Canada's position at the time.
And once that law was overturned, once the war was really about to break out, then that started to change, right? So Illinois became a safer place to stay. As attitudes shifted, but this was sort of almost a temporary measure. In the meantime, was well, okay, we'll get them as far north as Canada, and then they can live life there. And efforts in Canada were also made to reunite families when possible. I mean, it certainly was not common to find everyone that you were hoping to find, but there are good records in Canada of some people being reunited. So some. Good stories out of some very sad times in the history of this nation.
Sure. What can visitors to Eels House expect to see and find?
Well, I'll tell you what they can't see, which is interesting. A lot of people expect tunnels. I took a group of teenagers through the house, and they said, "Where are the tunnels?" And we said, "Well, it's not exactly underground. They're not putting subway cars through Quincy, Illinois." But this is a really amazing restored property with period decor. The house is a brick house, and it's very of the period. It had been added on to in the 1840s by the family as they adopted some children. But it's been really meticulously maintained to be era-specific for Dr. Eels' time.
Dr. Eels has a place in history for other reasons, too. My understanding is that he at one point ran for president of the United States and for governor of the state of Illinois.
Sure did. He became the president of the Anti-Slavery Party. And actually, this was mostly due to his affiliation and being caught trying to help Charlie escape. He became sort of a rallying point. It was followed very closely by the newspapers at the time, not just here in Quincy, but in the entire region. So he was the president of the Illinois Anti-Slavery Party in 1843, then became a candidate for the Liberty Party for the presidential election of 1844, and tried again for the gubernatorial election of 1846. So he certainly had hopes of making an even larger difference than helping just one person at a time. He wanted to make a national difference and be part of that conversation. And certainly an amazing family and an amazing man.
And Mike, as you indicated earlier, he was no stranger to the courts as a result of these activities.
No, he really wasn't, sadly. I mentioned, you know, earlier that he died on a riverboat, but his estate appealed his case to the United States Supreme Court, which also upheld the guilty verdict, unfortunately. But again, like I said, in December 2014, Dr. Eels was pardoned by the governor of Illinois, which was pretty wonderful month for us here in Quincy. We were, and all of the people who are affiliated with the Dr. Eels house, we were just elated. Could not find any relatives, though, any distant relatives even, to help with the honor in Springfield, our capital.
Another name that is rich in our history books is that of Stephen Douglas, famous for his debates with Abraham Lincoln, of course. But he also is mentioned as part of the process because he was involved in one of those court cases.
That's right. He was actually the prosecutor against Dr. Mm-hmm. Eales. So Quincy, you know, St. Louis area may not know, is a very heavy Lincoln site. One of the Lincoln, the sixth Lincoln-Douglas debate happened just a stone's throw from where Mike and I are sitting, actually. And Stephen Douglas made his name by being sort of the tough on crime sort of man. So he took it upon himself to he requested this case. He wanted to prosecute Dr. Eales. It was part of how he built his name. So as Dr. Eales and others were building names for themselves in the abolitionist movement, Stephen A. Douglas was opposing that. And of the time, you would call him a law and order candidate. He was very much about prosecuting people he considered dangerous, debated Abraham Lincoln here on our Washington Square. We have several great Lincoln sites, looking for Lincoln sites right here in Quincy. So if any of you fancy a day trip up north, we sure would love to have you at any of these sites.
Well, I hope people listening will do just that. You know, I'm thinking of Douglas. He is like many politicians today. He saw a path to prominence, and this was it, apparently, right?
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. He gained notoriety every time he got a prosecution, every time he got a win. The Whig, the newspaper was called The Whig at the time. The Whig would cover it, and people would be so excited and say, that guy, he's keeping us safe or whatnot. So he really gained notoriety that way. And, you know, the battle lines were drawn right here in our own backyard across the literal line of the river.
Our folks in Quincy, we only have a few seconds left, but folks in that community pretty much up to speed on that part of their history?
You know, we have a lot of great resources for people to take advantage of all of these sites, but we could always do more. So we're so happy to have this opportunity to talk to kind of a wider audience. To find out more, though, for any of your listeners, first of all, the Eales House has regular hours during the summer, 1 to 4 p.m. on Saturdays from May through November. Group tours are available. We'll get that up on your website. And artsquincy.org talks about all of the history and humanities of Quincy as well as arts. So we'd love to have you check it out because our calendar is jam-packed of great events, lots of them free of charge, and love to have you.
We're going to put all of that information on our website at stlpublicradio.org. I want to thank you, Laura Sievert and Mike Smith, for being with us and telling us about Eales House and the history of Dr. Eales and the Underground Railroad. It's been fascinating. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Good luck up there in Quincy.
Thank you, sir.
Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.